Amen.
Good morning. Welcome to Triad Baptist Church on Palm Sunday. We're glad that you are here this morning. Two quick announcements before I get rolling. On April 3rd, which is the Wednesday after Easter, so about a week and a half from right now, we are inviting everyone to do a 40-day prayer challenge. We're going to be using the book Draw the Circle, which is this book. It's a 40-day prayer challenge for daily devotionals and memorizing scripture. We've not done anything like this, at least in my time here. It's been quite a long time since we've done a book study together as a church. We may have never done it before, but we're going to do it starting a week and a half from today. Details will be on social media. The book is available right out here for $10. If you get one per family, that should be sufficient. It's $10 an issue. If that's a problem, let us know that as well. But we're looking forward to what God is going to do through this study together. So get your books by next Sunday to begin that a week and a half from today. Second thing I've got is we've got Easter invitations all over our campus. Jeremy does a good job on our graphics. He put this graphic together. These invitations are no good after next week. They're no good. They're worthless. Like, they have the gospel on the back, and you have an opportunity to invite someone to come with you. I've given out probably about 14 or 15 of these. They're very easy to give out. Just, hey, what are your plans for Easter? People don't know what to say, and they say, hey, come with me to Triad Baptist Church. And I've invited a handful of people using these. Do it this week. Again, if we still have them on our campus after this week, they're no good next Sunday, okay? So invite people to come with you for Easter. They're much more open to coming this time of year than at many others. So invite people to come with you next Sunday for Easter. If you have a Bible, find your place this morning in John chapter 11. We'll be there in just a moment. John chapter 11. I'm a very time-conscious person. I like to schedule things out. This service begins at 10:35. I need to be done by a particular time. I keep a countdown on my watch to let me know when I'm supposed to be done, and it vibrates when my time is up. And so I do that because I'm conscious of my time. I want to be conscious of your time. I remember as a kid showing up late to stuff, and it drove me crazy. Like, I didn't like it. I didn't like being late to stuff. And so I wanted to be on time, or I wanted to be early. Now, as an adult, when I'm late to stuff, I get really, really frustrated with myself or people that make me late. Sometimes my wife makes me late. Sometimes my kids make me late. Sometimes I make myself late, and I don't like to be late. But we're going to be talking today about this topic. When I go on a missions trip, sometimes I will ask the pastor when I get there, so how long do you want me to preach? And he'll say, oh, just preach, preacher. And it's like, well, that's great, but I really need a time to be done, okay? I'm not just going to preach for 3 hours, okay? So let me know what the time is. And in a lot of foreign countries that I've gone to, they don't have the same Western civilization context of time that we do. For instance, if you guys are still sitting here at noon, you're going to be very irritated with me, and I'm going to be irritated with myself. But in a lot of other places, they'll begin a service at 10:30, which really means 10:42 or 10:58 or whenever people show up. I remember my first missions trip I went on was to Romania, and I preached in a gypsy village, and I told the pastor, I said, how long do you want me to preach? And he said, just preach. And I said, but seriously, how long do you want me to go? And he said, just go. And I said, but you have to tell me a time. Like, I don't want to be there 15 minutes or 55 minutes. Just give me some kind of gauge. And he said, these people don't understand any concept of time. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he went on to tell me that these gypsies in particular have no concept of time. Like, for instance, I can say to them, I'll see you tomorrow. And they're like, what's tomorrow? And I'm like, that doesn't compute with me. And he'll say, you know, when we first came here, I said, I'll be back next Sunday, same time, same place. And they're like, whatever. Like, the Western civilization that we have of time is like, man, I got to be done. I got to start. I got to get going. But it's not like that in other places of the world. Not every day is like this, but I want to give you a typical breakdown of a typical Monday for me. At 5:50, my alarm goes off, as it did this morning. I try to go to the gym. I try to get home in time to shower and get ready for work and leave for school by 7:40. I usually get to my desk about 7:45. On a Monday, we have staff meetings, staff lunch, various meetings. I try to prep for a Sunday school or a sermon, any counseling I've got this week, an online course I'm taking. I'm doing 4 missions trips this year, 3 of which I'm on. I'm home by 4:30. I try to have dinner and hear about my wife's day and my kids' day. I do 3 connect groups. One of them is on a Monday night, so we've got that. At 9:40, I will have a reminder that goes off on my phone and my watch that says, you need to be in the bed in 10 minutes. Because if you're not in the bed in 10 minutes, you're not going to get 8 hours of sleep, for you to start your Tuesday. Now, I give you that example because this is all of Western civilization. I don't share that with you so you'll think, wow, Jason's really busy. I share that because all of you have a similar busy, crazy schedule. Some of you travel for work weekly or monthly. Some of you have more kids than I do. Some of you have two adults working full-time jobs. Some of you have greater responsibilities. And the point is, this is all of our lives. We rush and we hurry and we're busy and we try to cram it all into a certain block of time, 168 hours a week. This is all of our lives. They're filled with things, the good things, but many different things. In John chapter 10, Jesus has been threatened by the religious Jewish authorities. And so what he did is he resorts to the north. He flees to the north because they're wanting to stone him. They're wanting to kill him, and he knows my time has not yet come. So Jesus resorts to the north because they were trying to kill him. So by John chapter 11, which is our text today, Jesus is roughly at least 2 days away from the town of Bethany. Some have said he's more like 3 or 4 days away, but he's at least 2 days away from the town of Bethany. So with that context and that filter, I want you to stand this morning as we read John chapter 11. I'm going to read the first 6 verses for sake of time and by way of introduction. John chapter 11, I'll begin in verse 1, and I'll read down to verse number 6. Verse 1, "Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him, saying, 'Lord, he whom you love is ill.' But when Jesus heard it, he said, 'This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it.' Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, 'Let us go to Judea again.'" You can be seated. Thank you for standing. I know this is a common story. You've heard it 100 times, but I believe there are principles in John 11 that are still common to us today and can help us in our Western thinking. In order for a sermon title to get on the screen by way of graphic, I have to send that to certain people. And I send it to Jeremy. Jeremy's done our media for years now. He does a great job with graphics. And he asked me this week, he said, "Do you have any graphic ideas for your sermon title?" And I said, "No, just get me some stuff." So that's what I told him to do. I didn't really have a direction I wanted to go. But for my Sunday school class and our Sunday school series, I don't bother Jeremy with church graphics. I just create my own. And I'm not very good at creating graphics. I didn't go to graphic design school. I'm not really good at Canva, and sometimes I try and it just doesn't work out. So recently, I found this app that's free that uses AI to generate images, and I thought this will be fun. So I've actually used it for a couple months in my Sunday school class. So what I did this week is I told Jeremy, I said, "You create a graphic, and I'm going to create mine using AI, and we'll see which one we go with." And we're going with Jeremy's today because it is better, but I wanted you to see, I prompted and said, "I want to see, create an image of a modern day Jesus who is running late." And this was the image that I got. I really like that image. I think it's awesome. And I wanted to at least show it to you. I really wanted to show it in the last service, but I ran out of time. I did not show it then. But I thought you would appreciate that. This is a modern day Jesus who is running late. You guys can switch and take that off. It's too distracting to keep up there. Today we're going to talk about what it means to run late. We're going to look at this passage in John chapter 11 where it appears to literally everyone involved in the story that Jesus has blown it. Jesus is running late. His timetable is just not what it should be by all accounts. And today, if you're taking notes, we're going to notice 4 parts to this story. Number one, if you're writing these down, I want you to notice that the relationship was evident. The relationship that Jesus had with these 3 people, it was evident. It was obvious. Mary and Martha and Lazarus. There's a lot of characters that John mentions in his gospel that all we know about them is their name or where they're from, or we have no real information about most people that are mentioned. But these 3 are an exception. They actually knew these people. Mary and Martha and Lazarus were 3 siblings who were legitimately friends and followers of Jesus. Maybe you've ever met someone famous in your life. Mr. Tim does a 5th grade flyby And so he sends a questionnaire out to all of our fifth graders. And every month, there will be a fifth grader that gives, or two fifth graders that give their answers. And one of the questions that he asks is, have you ever met anyone famous? And it's interesting to read through those to see who some of these kids have met. Some of them have met famous people like pro athletes or semi-pro athletes or musicians or whatever. And if there's a kid that hasn't ever met anyone famous, they just write down Pastor Rob, which I think is hilarious because he's not famous. But to these kids, he's the most famous person like they've ever met. And that is so cool. And I'm sure he loves to see that as well when they write that. But if you've ever met someone famous, I've met a handful of famous people in my life. Did I meet them? Yes. Did I get a picture with them? Yes, if I could. Do I know them? No. If you were to ask any of the famous people I've met, hey, do you know Jason Shuler? He goes to my church. They would say, no, I don't know who that is. I've never heard of him. I know who they are. I don't know them. You may have met someone famous. You may know who they are. You may follow them on social media, but you don't really know them. They don't really know you. I'm no more than a casual follower of these people. In John 11, these three characters, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, these weren't just casual followers of Jesus. These weren't just some randoms that showed up to a couple miracles that he did. These were committed, dedicated followers of Jesus. They were very close friends. And so they wanted to get a message to Jesus. If all I can do is get a message to him, I know that he can heal our brother. All I have to do is get a message. He doesn't have to come wherever he is, whatever he's doing. He doesn't have to come to us. All we have to do is get the message to Jesus. He was at least 4 days away from them, but they knew that Jesus had healed from a distance before. Distance would have been a barrier for me, but it's not a barrier to God. In John chapter 1, Jesus saw Nathanael under a fig tree from a distance. He didn't physically was able to see him, but he knew he was there. He saw him from a distance. In John chapter 4, there was a nobleman who came to Jesus asking for him to heal his son. And in verse 50 of John 4, Jesus said to the man, go your way, your son lives. He didn't leave doing what he was doing. He didn't go to the nobleman's son and physically touch him and heal him. He healed him from a distance. In John chapter number 9, Jesus healed a man that was born blind. He touched his eyes and he told him, go wash in the pool of Siloam. And it was there that he received his sight. So three different times in John's gospel, before we get to chapter 11, Jesus has already healed or done something from a distance. So proximity is not something that would bind Jesus from being able to limit his healing of Lazarus. So Mary and Martha just get a message to him. We know you've healed from a distance before. All we have to do is get the message to you. We know that you are able to heal our brother. They believed that he was more than a prophet. He was more than just some man who could do miracles. He was the Messiah and he was God. If we can get a message to Jesus, he can heal our brother. The relationship that they had with him was evident. Here's a question for you. Is your relationship with Jesus evident? Is it obvious? Is it apparent to people that you work with and people who are in your extended family and your neighbors and your community and the friends that you run with? Is it obvious that you are a follower of Jesus? I was thinking about this past week. In my relationship with my kids, what do I want my kids to know about their dad? I want them to know that I love and have a relationship with Jesus. I want them to know that. And as I think about that, there are people that know a lot of things about you, but do they know that? They may know that you're a Tar Heel fan. They may know that you're a Republican or a Democrat or an Independent or whatever. They may know your favorite place to vacation. They may know your favorite restaurant to eat at. They may know how much you love the vehicle that you drive. But do they know that you love and have a relationship with Jesus? Mary and Martha and Lazarus were sinners, just like everyone else. But as I read this passage and I understand the relationship that they had, I think to myself, if anyone deserved a miracle, it was his family, right? It was Mary. It was Martha. It was Lazarus. If anybody deserved to have Jesus come through for them and heal them, it would have been this family. You think about the meals they served, the service that they had to Jesus and his disciples, the ministry that they had, Mary with her ointment, and John 6, when many of Jesus' followers and disciples walked away, these guys didn't. They remained. They stayed close to Jesus. Jesus, who never had a place to lay his head, had an open invitation to stay with this family. Many times in my life, when I ask God for something, sometimes what I do, I'll admit this to you, is I will think about my track record with Jesus. I'll think about that. And if you're being honest, you probably do too. Again, we're all sinners. None of us desire or deserve for God to perform a miracle for us. None of us deserve it. But sometimes we think, hey, you know, if it's me and this other guy, I mean, God, I'm doing my best here. Now, I'm faithful to my spouse, and I love my kids and my grandkids, and I try to be a good parent and grandparent, and I'm at multiple church services each week, and I go to church events, and I contribute financially to the church, and I share my faith, and I invited someone to Easter, and I live a morally clean, honest lifestyle. There's a lot of bad stuff I could be doing, God, but I'm not. And I've asked for this, and I want you to give it to me. I want you to give me the request that I have. I'm not saying I deserve a miracle, but based on comparison, we think we're doing pretty good. I don't think anybody deserves a miracle from Jesus, but when you read through the passage and you understand the relationship that Jesus had with Mary and Martha and Lazarus, you would think to yourself, if anyone deserved a miracle, it was these people, because the relationship was evident. Number two, I want you to notice the request was expedient. This was not a, hey, if you happen to swing by Bethany on your way back into town, you know, we think Lazarus might die. You know, we think he's really sick. This wasn't a casual request. It was expedient. Look at verse number 3. So the sisters sent to him saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. The connotation there is he's at the point of death. We don't know what's wrong with him. He's not getting any better. In fact, he seems to be getting worse. Can you come through for us? In Bible times, nations who served various false gods, they felt that their gods would only protect them within the borders of their land. So when they left the borders of their territory and their land and they would go out to other parts to conquer, they would pray to their gods to protect them because they knew that their gods would protect them in the land, but not outside the land. When they conquered a new land, their land expanded, and so did their God's power. And as I think about that, what a weak God that would need me to expand his power as I conquer land. So the gods of other nations, they were bound by region and territory and borders. However, Mary and Martha believed that the one true God was Jesus. He was not bound by physical location at any time. Their request was simple, and it was urgent. Lord, he who you love is sick. He's ill. He's sick. We're asking you to come and heal him. But Jesus, even though not bound by location and not bound by proximity, is also not bound by the timetable that we have set for him. You ever ask God for something and received it on the very first ask? It's pretty rare that that happens. Maybe you've had that happen. When I order something from Amazon, how many Amazon Prime users do we have in the room today? Wow, I'm in good company. A lot of you. A lot of Amazon accounts in here. When I order something from Amazon, I am guaranteed that it will be to me in about 2 days. And 2 days is getting to be kind of long. I don't know if you've noticed, but they've really ramped up. Sometimes it's overnight. My Ring Cam will get a notification at 4 a.m. and it's like, hey, you know, I don't really need it overnight. Thank you for that. But it's usually a day or two. We order something from Amazon Prime, it's there. And sometimes if we're not careful, we treat God as if he works for Amazon Prime. Hey, God, I'm just going to put this in. I don't need it overnight. I don't need that. But give me a day or two. Maybe a day or two I could have it. This is the request. Someone I love is sick. And if you could just come through in the next couple days, that'd be great. Hey, God, I really don't know what I'm going to do in this financial situation that I'm in. Again, I don't need the bank account to just, you know, blow up overnight. But if you could, I'll give you a couple days. If you could get back with me, that would be great. We treat God like he works for Amazon Prime. And like there's the Prime guarantee, and we're going to get this answered prayer request in a couple days. And it doesn't work that way. It seems to me like every time I ask God for something, it's order pending, or your order was lost, or there's no status update available for this, or we're just going to send you your money back. That's what it feels like sometimes when I ask God for something that hasn't come through. I wonder if he's received my order. I wonder if he's received my request. God, do you know what it is I'm going through? Do you understand what life is like for me as I wait for you to show up and do something? Look at verse number 6. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to his disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you. And are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in a day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him." After saying these things, he said to them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will recover." Now, Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant taking rest and sleep. Verse 14, then Jesus said to them plainly, Lazarus has died. And for your sake, I'm glad that I was not there so that you may believe, but let us go to him. Now, as I'm reading this story, maybe you've read through John 11 before in your devotions or something, you've read through this story. It feels to me like Jesus intentionally delayed and delayed and delayed until Lazarus was dead. That's what it feels like. It feels like he could have come immediately. He knew Lazarus was going to get sick. He knew Lazarus was going to die. But instead of healing him from a distance, or instead of just leaving immediately and going to be with Mary and Martha, Jesus intentionally delays. It's clear from the text that he delayed and delayed, and now Lazarus is dead. And what I want you to understand about that is this. Sometimes God will allow a dream to die in order to test our faith. I got to be honest with you. I don't care for this part of God's will in a lot of situations. Because sometimes he does this. Sometimes he allows a dream to die just to test our faith. I'm talking to people in this room today, and you have had a dream die on the vine this year. You've had it happen. You've had something in your life that you've asked God for, and you've asked him to come through, and you believe for it, and you believe he's going to do it, and you believe he wants to do it, and you believe he's going to come through for you. But he's delaying, and he's delaying, and you feel like your dream's dying. And some of you have had a dream die this year. Some of you in the last couple years, you have had something that you earnestly sought God for. Maybe you even fasted and prayed for it, and you asked God to do something in your life, and he still has not come through. And that's frustrating. And I can't tell you I understand it, but sometimes God will allow a dream to die in order to test our faith. Because death is so final and it seems so permanent, God will sometimes allow things to die in order to test our faith. And when that happens, we begin to ask God questions like this. God, is this really what you called me to do? Is this really what you want for my life? Is this really where you want me to be at this stage in my life? Is this really something I'm supposed to do? God, do you know how frustrating it is for me to just sit here and wait on you to show up? Do you understand that? Do you realize how difficult this has been? Are you taking my request seriously? There's something in my life that I asked God to fix in June of this past year. It was a situation, and I asked God to fix it. There's nothing I could do to fix it. There's nothing anybody else could do to fix it. And I just said, God, I'm asking you to fix this situation in my life. And this was in June. And June came and went. And then July came. And it didn't get any better. In fact, it got worse. And then in August. And then in September. And I began to think, God, do you see that this is an issue? Like, this is a problem. And we need to do something about this. And there's nothing I can do, but there's something you can do. Do you understand the gravity of this situation? Like, this is not getting better. God, this is actually getting worse, and I'm frustrated, and people around me are frustrated, and I'm not the only one that feels this way, and this is crazy, and it just keeps getting worse, and it keeps intensifying, and I want God to answer my request when I ask for it, but he doesn't do that, and there are requests I've asked God for that he still hasn't answered. You ever been there? Are you there right now? Asking God for something, and you're like, are these requests not getting there? You ever leave someone, you're going to leave them a voicemail, and they say their mailbox is full, and they can no longer receive messages. You ever feel like that is your prayer life sometimes? Like, God, is your mailbox full, and you can no longer receive messages? Like, do I need to text you? Do I need to send an email? Like, how do I get this request to you in a way that you'd understand the gravity of what I'm dealing with? We do that. We ask God for something, and we don't get an answer. It's like the heavens are shut up. That's what C.S. Lewis said. It just keeps getting worse. Look at verse number 17, because in our text, it gets worse. Now, when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. The fact that Lazarus had been dead for 4 days is very significant, and I'll explain to you why that is. This is not Bible, but this is traditional Jewish custom in the first century. Jewish custom was to bury a dead body on the same day that they died. They would not embalm. They would not remove any organs. They would just bury the body. So because of that, sometimes the dead person wasn't really dead, and they were in a coma, and they would revive after a couple hours. And so to guard against someone being buried alive, what they would do is when someone would die and they would bury them, they'd put them in a tomb and put a stone over the tomb, like what seems to be the case here. They would station someone outside the tomb for 2 to 3 days just to listen to see if they started making any noise, if they woke up from their coma or their sickness or whatever. I mean, you think about that's a pretty boring job. Until one day, maybe it isn't, you know? You're like, hey, do you guys hear that? You hear a voice inside? It sounds like someone is really in there. Hey, guys, we got a live one in here. Come on, come over here. You got to see this. This guy's been gone a couple days, but he's really alive. I mean, think about how crazy that would be. Jewish mourning tradition taught that when the body dies, again, this is not scripture, so don't think this is biblical. It's just their tradition. Jewish mourning tradition taught that when a body dies, the soul would hover around the body for 3 days, deciding whether or not to return to the body or move on. But the same tradition said that by the 4th day, the soul had permanently departed. Now, all of the people in this story in John 11 believed that. They believed you could die, and then you're really in a coma, and you could come out after day 2 or day 3. They believed that the soul was hovering, deciding what to do. But they all believed, based on tradition, that by day 4, there was no hope. So I personally believe that Mary and Martha sent the news to Jesus, can you do something? Can you heal him? Jesus tarried 2 days, took 2 days to get back. He died. They have to be thinking by day 1, hey, it's okay. He died, but maybe he's in a coma. Maybe he's sleeping. Maybe he'll rise from the dead. Maybe he'll rise from his coma. That's what they're thinking. Day 2, day 3, this is traditional. They're thinking this has got to happen. Jesus is going to heal him even from a distance. We're going to hear Lazarus wake up from his coma on the inside. But by day 4, which is what I believe the reason Jesus intended to wait as long as he did, there was no hope. Nobody in first century Bethany or Jerusalem believed that after day 4, there was any hope for Lazarus. Look at verse number 17. Now, when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary and to console them concerning their brother. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Now, I don't want to read into this too much, but every man in this room knows what it's like to have a woman who is upset with you. If you didn't laugh there, you're probably sitting next to her right now. You know what it's like to have a woman that's upset with you. So when I read this, it says, Martha hears that he's coming, so she goes out to meet him. And I instantly think, this is not good. This is not good. She's not willing to sit in the house. She is so mad, she's going to meet him in the driveway as soon as he pulls up. She's been watching the road. She's been watching for Jesus and his crew to come back from out of town. Here he comes. Hey, Jesus is coming. Good. I'm going to go out there and meet him. So when I read that, I think about Martha. This is not good. Well, then I read about Mary. She hears that he's coming. She doesn't go out to meet him. Well, this is also not good. I've been married long enough to know that silence sometimes is a killer. And, here he is. He got Mary and Martha. He shows up, and neither one of them are very happy with him. Number one, the relationship was evident. Number two, the request was expedient. Number three, the reaction was expected. The reaction was expected. I do not blame either of these women for how they responded to Jesus coming. You know why? Because he's 4 days late. He's 4 days late. Like, literally, it took you 2 days to get here, and you tarried for 2 more? Like, you're 4 days late. He died 4 days ago. He died. We buried him. He's in the tomb. All hope is gone. The soul has departed. He's gone. There's nothing you can do. Look at verse number 21. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Sometimes women say things, and we don't understand what it is that they're saying. I don't know if this happens in your marriage, but sometimes I feel like my wife is upset. And I'll say, everything okay? And she'll say, everything's fine. Okay, the words that you're saying would indicate that things are fine. But the tone indicates that things are not very fine. They're not fine. If I ask my wife how she's doing, she goes, fine. I have learned in almost 15 years, this is an indicator, things are not fine. I am in big trouble. I don't know yet if she's Martha coming out to meet me in the driveway or if she's Mary sitting silently in the home, but things are not fine. There's no mincing words with what Martha says here. Verse 21, she said to Jesus, Lord, if you would have been here, my brother would not have died. The implication is clear. Lazarus's death is Jesus's fault. That's what she's saying. His death is on you. He got sick. We called for help. You could heal from a distance. You didn't heal him. You could have come. You didn't come. You waited two more days. Then it took you 2 days to get here. He died. He's been in that tomb 4 days. Your fault. It's a clear implication. Have you ever blamed Jesus for something that didn't go your way? Man, I have. In fact, I think I did it this past week, even as I was prepping for this sermon. Blame Jesus for something that didn't go my way. I got people counting on me to pray for this. I got people counting on me to fix this situation, to do something with this, to make some good come from this situation, and now Lazarus is dead. Look at verse number 32. This is Mary. Now, when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Same phrase, same exact statement, because if you can count on a lot of things in life, count on this, women talk. They knew, they had talked for 4 days. These two women, these sisters had talked about the fact that Jesus did not show up for us. Do you agree that if Jesus would have been here, Lazarus wouldn't have died? Oh yeah, I believe it. In fact, I've seen Jesus heal people before. I've seen Jesus do a lot of stuff. I've seen him heal people from a distance. If Jesus would have been here, my brother would not have died. They talked about it for 4 days. This is the same statement by both women. This reaction was to be expected. They were essentially saying, Jesus, you missed everything. You missed everything. He was sick, and you weren't here. He died, and you weren't here. We prepped his body for burial, and you weren't here. We put him in the tomb. You weren't here. We had a funeral service for him. You weren't here. The least you could have done was shown up to the funeral and said a few nice things about Lazarus and your experience in knowing him in this life. All of this life happened in the last 4 days, and now it's over, and he's dead, and you missed everything. Can you just see Jesus' closest friends watching the door every few hours to see if he'd show up and save the day and heal Lazarus? You missed everything. There have been seasons in my life when I feel like God was missing everything. God, you're not showing up for me like I thought you would. I read what you did in the Old Testament. I read what you did in Bible times. I've heard what you've done for my parents and my grandparents. I hear what you're doing for other people in my church and other people in my life, but you're not showing up for me. Why won't you show up for me? I feel like you're missing everything. Do you know what I'm going through? Do you know what I'm up against? Do you know what they said about me? Do you know what's next for me? Do you know what the next couple of weeks looks like? Do you know how my financial situation is? I'm waiting at the mailbox. I'm checking the bank account. I'm looking around the corner. I'm telling people, hey, I serve Jesus. I go to church. He'll be here. He'll show up any minute for me. He'll show up for you. You just keep watching and waiting. And we begin to think, have you forgotten about me? Have you abandoned me? Have you just left me? Or do you know what it is that's going on down here? You ever done that? You ever looked to the sky for answers? Hey, what in the world? God, do you know where I'm at right now in my life? Do you know who is sick? Do you know that my kids are struggling with this? Do you know the decisions my grandkids are making with their life? Do you know about the job situation? Do you know that my marriage is in trouble? God, you don't understand how late you are for me. Don't you know I'm hurting? I pleaded for you to intervene. And you sat around for 4 days. And now he's dead. It's too late. I asked you to come through for me, God, and I thought that you would. I knew that you would. But now it's too late. You showed up too late for me. This is how they feel. The truth is, he did come. It just seemed too late for Lazarus. We planned a trip last year to go to Israel with 45 people here at our church. And I guess about 6 weeks before we left is when war broke out. Really poor timing for our trip, and certainly poor timing for the people there in Israel. There's a family in this church. Somebody has dealt with pancreatic cancer just in the last 6 months. I know another family, dad saved up for retirement. Now he can't enjoy it because he and his wife are too sick. They need constant care. I know of another couple that I know well that can't have kids, can't have pregnant. You hear this, you're not good enough. You don't meet our standards. You're not getting the promotion. You can't find a job since you lost the last one. Insurance doesn't cover this. Marriage isn't working. Kids are making decisions you disagree with. And you think to yourself, God, I'm running out of time. I don't know how much longer I can do this. I've asked you for this, and I've asked you for this, and you just don't seem to be coming through for me. It's frustrating. We wonder if God is still even coming. If you've asked any of those questions before, you're in good company, because they ask these questions. We've all asked these questions. They were asking them in John 11, too. In verses 21 and 32, the statements that were exactly the same from Mary and Martha, they didn't like his timing. I won't take time to read verses 38 through 44, but not only did they not like his timing, they didn't like his terms. You see, in my life, I want God to answer my requests on my timing and in my terms. I want you to do this, this, and this, and I want it to happen this time, and I want it to happen in this way. And you know, God almost never answers any of my requests in my timing or on my terms. I got it all set up. God does not know how well I have planned all of this to work out, and he doesn't care. He never answers my requests in my timing. He never answers things according to my terms. They didn't like his timing or his terms in this passage either. Look at verse number 38. Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he has been dead 4 days." You know the rest of the story. Jesus says, "Lazarus, come forth." He's able to heal Lazarus, raise him from the dead. The relationship was evident. Number two, the request was expedient. And number three, the reaction was expected. But number four, and this is what I want you to understand about this story, is the result was eternal. The result was eternal. There was something at play in this situation that did not make sense to Mary. And it did not make sense to Martha. And it did not make sense to Lazarus. And it didn't make sense to the disciples. And it didn't make sense to any of the people that were there mourning with Mary and Martha. When something in this life doesn't make sense, perhaps it was designed for beyond this life. You read through the Abrahamic covenant in Genesis 12. God promised all of these things to Abraham when he was 75 years old. And when Abraham was pushing 100, he still did not have a child. He still did not have an heir. He still was not a great nation. In fact, not all of Genesis chapter 12 was even fulfilled in Abraham's lifetime. In part, there's parts of it still being fulfilled even today. We think God's going to show up in our timing and based on our terms, and he never does that. And the truth is, some of you, God has put something in your heart, a dream that is alive, and he's not answered it yet, and maybe he won't answer it this year. Maybe he won't answer it a decade from now, and maybe he won't even answer it in your lifetime. When something in this life doesn't make sense, perhaps it was designed for beyond this life. Because when the temporal doesn't add up, eternity is in play. I won't have you turn to Isaiah, but I'll put the words on the screen. Isaiah thought he had everything figured out in Isaiah 55. This is Isaiah 55. This is toward the end of Isaiah's ministry. He had been serving God. He had been preaching for God to the people of God for many, many decades. He thought he had everything figured out. Listen to what Isaiah 55 says in the first 11 verses. This is God speaking to Isaiah. Come, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. He who has no money, come and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen diligently to me and eat what is good and delight yourselves in rich food. Incline your ear and come to me. Hear that your soul may live, and I will make with you an everlasting covenant, my steadfast, sure love for David. Behold, I made him a witness to the peoples, a leader and commander for the peoples. Behold, you shall call a nation that you do not know, and a nation that did not know you shall run to you because of the Lord your God and of the Holy One of Israel, for he has glorified you. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Listen to what he says here in verse 7. Let the wicked forsake his way and the righteous man his thoughts. Let him return to the Lord that he may have compassion on him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain and snow come down from heaven and do not return there, but water the earth, making it bring forth and sprout, giving seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goes out from my mouth. It shall not return to me empty, but it shall accomplish that which I purpose and shall succeed in the thing for which I send it. God says, hey, don't think that you understand what I'm doing. I know you've been my prophet for decades. I know you think you know everything that there is to know and you've got it all figured out, but there's things that I'm doing you don't understand. My word's not going to return void. I'm going to make sure everything happens the way it's supposed to happen. But understand this, Isaiah, as the heavens are higher than the earth, my ways are higher than your ways, my thoughts than your thoughts. I will accomplish what I purpose to do. And if I want a man sitting in a tomb dead for 4 days so that I can do a miracle and bring him back to life, that's what I'm going to do. It wasn't my will to heal your brother the moment he got sick. It wasn't my will to heal him the moment that he died. It was my will for him to sit and begin to decompose for 4 days. That's when I'll raise him back up. You don't understand what I'm doing, but I got a plan. It's going to be my plan, and I'm going to purpose for the purpose that I intended. So you mark it down. 2,000, 4,000, 5,000 years later, when the temporal doesn't add up, eternity is in play. God is doing something, and he's working a work that we don't understand. Look at verse number 23 of our text. Jesus said to her, this is Martha that he's speaking to, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. Martha said, I understand the Old Testament. I understand that you're the Messiah and you're God. And I understand that all of us, no matter when we die or how we die, we're going to be buried. And on the last day, you're going to raise us all in the great resurrection. I understand that. And Jesus said, no, no, no. Your brother will rise at the last day. But I want you to know, I am the resurrection. You see, the people in John 11 knew Jesus had the power over disease, because he had healed people. He had the power over deformity because he had healed people. He had the power over destruction and devastation and depression. They knew all of those things, but what they didn't know is that he had the power over death itself. Not a person that had just died, but a person that had been dead in a tomb for 4 days. They didn't understand that he had the power over death itself. Yet Mary and Martha said, yeah, we know he'll rise in the last day. Why didn't you come mourn with us? We can all mourn together and he's going to rise one day. And Jesus says, no, 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 no. He's not going to rise the last day only. He's going to rise today. Because I want you to understand, I am the resurrection. I don't just heal people. I don't just bring life. I am the resurrection. I am the life. Those who were dead, they will live as I say. Jesus was up to something that no one expected. And even though you may think he's running late, I came to tell you today, he's right on time. He's right on time in your life. You think his train got delayed? I'm telling you, it didn't. You think he hasn't got your email? He got it. You keep looking out the door and looking out the window to see if you see anyone coming. Is there anyone going to happen? Is anything going to happen? Is anyone going to come? God, do you understand what it is I'm going through? We think that he's late. I got stuff in my life I feel like God is late. He's behind on. He's running behind schedule. But he's not. You think he's late? He's not. You think he's forgotten about you? He hasn't. You think he doesn't hear? He does. You think he doesn't care? He cares. You think he's not going to come through for you? I'm telling you that he will. It just might not be on your timetable. It's not going to be according to your time. It's not going to be according to your terms. Jesus came through for this family, and I believe he'll come through for you as well. In his timing, on his terms. My question today is this. Where do you think God's running late in your life? Probably no one in this room just automatically feels like everything's great in my life. God is running on time and always has and always will. And I'm just not really stressed about anything I'm going through in my life. We all have things that we wish he would come through. We feel like he's running late. But based on the authority of God's word in the life of Lazarus, I can tell you, he's right on time. Let's pray this morning. With your heads bowed and your eyes closed, what I'd like for you to do in the next couple of moments is I just want you to examine your own life. I want you to think about your life and instances where you feel that God is running late for you. You're single, and he's running late. Your marriage is in trouble. He's running late. Your bills are stacking up. Retirement is looming. He seems to be running late. Your kids and grandkids are a mess. Anxiety is mounting in your life. You know people that you love who you feel are ruining their lives. He's running late. My loved one is sick. I don't know what I'm going to do if I lose him. You're patiently waiting, watching the door, looking to the sky, checking the mailbox, awaiting test results, hoping and praying for an answer that hasn't come yet. I want to be as transparent as I can possibly be as we close today. Before I preach a sermon to you, God has to preach it to me. And over the last several months, I have felt like I'm behind where I should be personally. I look at the lives of other people who are my age, and I see where they're at, and I see where I am, and I feel like I'm falling behind. Passed over. Feeling my prayer requests are falling short. Sometimes I think I'm running late. Maybe it's not God. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm not where I should be. Maybe I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Maybe it's me that's running late. Here lately, I felt like God's been running late for me. I got to tell you, it's tough wondering when he's going to show up, and some days wondering if he's going to show up. How many of you would be honest today and say, Jason, I got to be straight with you. I feel like God is running late for me. I feel like he should be here by now, and he hasn't shown up yet, and I'm starting to get a little bit worried. How many of you would raise your hand and say, nobody's looking around but me. How many of you would raise your hand and say, I feel like God's running late a little bit for me. Let me see your hands. Yeah. Welcome to the club. I appreciate your honesty. You can put your hands down. Maybe you're here today wondering how you can have a relationship with Jesus. As we say here, there's a million ways to Jesus, but there's only one way to God. Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life. He said, I'm the resurrection and the life. Nobody gets to the Father but by me. If you're here today and you want to know how you can have a personal relationship with Jesus, we've got counselors up at the front that would love to take God's word and show you how you can have a relationship with God today through the person of Jesus Christ. Some of you today just need to find a place around this altar and give your timetable to God. Yeah, you got plans. You've got a schedule. It's detailed. It's nice. But you need to turn that over to him. He's not running late in your life. I promise you, with what he's got planned for you, he is right on time. Some of you need to find a place around this altar today and give God your timetable. God, I thought you would have shown up by now, but I trust you. God, I don't understand why you're later than I'd hoped, but I know that you're good. God, I cannot possibly understand why I'm still fighting this, why I'm dealing with this, why I'm waiting for this, but I believe you have something better in store for me. Maybe today's the day that you allow God your timetable. You do with my life what you choose, in your timing and on your terms. Father, we love you and we're thankful for the time we've been able to spend in your word this morning. Lord, we're thankful of what you did in the lives of Mary and Martha and Lazarus, and I pray that that would serve as a reminder and an encouragement to us when we feel like you're running late in our lives. God, I pray for those here today that don't have a relationship with you. I pray that you would draw them to yourself in a way that only you can. God, for those of us that do have a relationship with you and we feel like you're missing it, you're running late. You've not shown up for us in the way that we thought that you would and the way that we know that you could. God, I pray that we would find a place today to surrender our plans to you in your timing and on your terms, and that you would be pleased in that. We love you in Jesus' name. Amen. Stand with me, if you will, all over the room. Some have come. If you'd like to come this morning, turn things over to God. I want you to feel free to do that.